Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Andrew Johnson of National Review, and for Jim Garrity this week, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And Andrew, we actually have a little double good today. The first one doesn't require much analysis, but it's finally official. They've actually counted the votes in Alaska, and Dan Sullivan has, in fact, won that seat, making it the eighth pickup for Republicans. They'll have at least 53 in the Senate come January, and if the odds in Louisiana hold up, we could very well see one more in the Republican column. But after a lengthy delay by modern standards, it's good to see that that race turned out exactly as we saw it.
At this point, Republicans already control the Senate. We knew that already. But it's also important because 2016 might not be the most favorable year for Republicans. It'll be tough, a presidential election year. There'll be a lot of these purple states that Republicans won in 2010 to sort of gain as much ground this year as they can to, you know, kind of give themselves some cushion in a couple of years.
22 Republican seats up in 2016. So a lot of defense being played by the GOP next time around. On to the other good martini now, Andrew, and this is courtesy of the Gallup organization. They have a tradition now after midterm and presidential elections of asking the American people, especially when there's, you know, divided government, obviously, which party do you hope sets the agenda in the coming 2 years, with Republicans controlling Congress now and Democrats controlling the White House still? 53% said they want Republicans to control the agenda, 36% only saying they want the president to do so. That's not only significant because it's a huge margin, but in historical terms, it's better than the 8-point margin the Republicans enjoyed after the 2010 midterms and the 9-point advantage that Republicans had after their huge wins in 1994. So if you just look at the past generation plus of American politics, the American people want the Republicans calling the shots here in a divided government more than any time in recent memory.
Yeah, and in some ways, this poll is a bit more telling than these polls that come out that, you know, what is Congress's approval rating, what is the president's approval rating. Those are important, but when Congress is in the teens, it just shows that people are generally disapproving of it. But this sort of shows who do the people want to be setting the agenda. They want Republicans doing it. And by a little bit more than 50%, the numbers show that it's one of the higher margins in recent elections or another more wave elections. It's just more affirmation that last Tuesday was a good day for Republicans, and it's a direction that people are looking to go. They gave Democrats and the Obama administration about 6 years, and they're figuring, all right, enough's enough. I think in some ways this number is actually more telling than it gets credit for.
Here's even more. Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air wrote about this survey and came up with this statistic inside the poll. Overall, almost twice as many say the country will be better off with the GOP in full charge of Congress than worse, although a plurality say it won't make any difference. That is almost identical to the number of Democrats who say losing Congress won't make a difference, and 12% of them think the country will be better off with the GOP leadership on Capitol Hill. So, good times. A lot of optimism on the Democratic side of the aisle, and the food fight continues, so that's always nice.
It's always also nice when, you know, or it's always funny when after, you know, they lose the election, that, well, we didn't really want control of Congress anyway. It doesn't really matter. I mean, fine.
That's a better explanation than I'm speaking for the 2/3 of people who didn't vote that the president trotted out the day after. That might
well,
be.
Well, I mean, you know, maybe they weren't in this survey either. I don't know. I don't know if Gallup reached those 2/3 of the people. They're very elusive.
Exactly. As long as you can speak for the people who don't speak at all, you're never wrong. Speaking of setting the agenda, not just in the coming Congress, but for the lame duck session here. A little bit of naked political wrangling could be in the works here on the Senate side. This courtesy of the Washington Post. Senate Democrats are working on plans to hold a vote authorizing construction of the Keystone XL pipeline, approval that Democrats believe might bolster the chances of Senator Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, who faces a tough runoff next month. It was not immediately clear Tuesday night whether Republicans would consent to proceeding with such a vote during the lame duck session that begins on Wednesday. And Andrew, for people in Louisiana, I think even if this vote were to be held, if it were to pass, Republicans would probably be kind of stupid to block it. But even if it passes, it's not like Mary Landrieu can really go out there and say this is something that she was able to force onto the docket, because anybody who's paying the least bit of attention knows that she's had 6 years to put this onto the docket, and the Democrats and the president have blocked it at every turn.
I'll be surprised if this happens. I guess it is something to keep an eye on. Like we talked about yesterday in this lame duck session, Democrats are kind of going to be shuffling priorities all over the place about what they want to do before they lose control of power. And this might just add to an already crowded agenda between trying to approve the attorney general nominee, between, you know, NSA reform, spending bill, all these different things. So add this to the docket of things Democrats are going to try and squeeze in there. But I would think that people would see this, like you said, as naked political gamesmanship on the part of Democrats and not give Mary Landrieu too much credit for it. Republicans have kind of taken that card away from Mary Landrieu because I saw earlier today that they were suggesting that Bill Cassidy, their Republican candidate, would have a place on the Energy Committee if he joins them in the Senate. And so that's kind of been Mary Landrieu's main calling card, is that, you know, I'll speak for Louisiana and for energy. I have a place on this committee. It is the chairmanship. But still, Republicans seem to be on top of this. I don't expect it will work. I guess keep an eye on it. But again, it shows, like we talked about yesterday, desperate times call for desperate measures on the part of Democrats.
And the bad martini here is that potentially it could work. I mean, Mary Landrieu is in a very rough spot right now. She barely won in the jungle primary, which means that Republicans are going to have the edge going into this thing. She stumbled out of the gate, as we talked about on Monday, with this ill-conceived attack on Bill Cassidy over Katrina, and the things are just not heading her way. She'd clearly be in the minority. Two senators in the majority would potentially have a stronger say in Louisiana affairs anyway. So be very hard for her to turn this around, but this could be one thing that would do it. I remember one time she ran for re-election, and it was all about sugar prices all of a sudden, because that's a big issue down there too, and a race that looked to be slipping away for her. She was able to win in the runoff as a result of that one issue. So it's
definitely a great thing to kind of swing the race on and get momentum on, and put out an ad, say Mary Landrieu, you know, fought to get the Keystone Pipeline approved a week or so before the election. And it can work. But we'll see what the voters of Louisiana say if this happens.
With this president, he'd probably veto it anyway, which would be the perfect cherry on top of this campaign.
Yeah.
All right, on to the bad martini now. And as we've established, the president didn't campaign for many people in this year's midterm elections. And the ones he did pretty much lost, with the exception of the Democrat up in Rhode Island. Anthony Brown lost, Pat Quinn lost in Illinois and so forth. And the track record wasn't much better for Hillary Clinton out there on the campaign trail. She stumped hard for Alison Grimes. She got crushed. She stumped pretty hard for Michelle Nunn. She got crushed. And in addition to these disappointing losses for Democrats, they didn't just lose in many of these cases, but they got pounded pretty much. They actually had to pay quite a bit to have Hillary Clinton come in the first place, and in the end it didn't turn out to do much for their campaigns. And so now they've got to pay Hillary Clinton's travel fees in addition to licking the wounds of losing these races. And so the Republican National Committee is pointing out that Hillary Clinton basically charged all these Democrats' campaign to fly her in on pricey charter flights to come in and stump for them. And Al Sharpton has decided this is not at all acceptable, because this is just Republicans being player haters. And he asked whether that was the case with his guest, Chris Witherspoon, who's host of The Dish on thegrio.com. Don't ask me what any of that means, but here's how that conversation went.
Is this just player hating on big figures?
Totally player hating. I mean, come on, they're the Clintons. They're American royalty. I don't want to see them flying on domestic Delta flights downtown in first class. I mean, they were flying on Air Force One for 8 years. How do you go from that to not staying on private jets and kind of having like that luxurious travel, you know, experience? So I'm not mad about their spending.
They're American royalty who shouldn't have to travel publicly. Andrew, how do you think the Founding Fathers would react to that one?
I just keep thinking, if this same thing is being leveled against Mitt Romney, they'd say, oh, you know, who is he? Why is he on all these private jets? Why is he on all this stuff? I mean, it just sort of the way the Hillary Clinton supporters and MSNBC and Al Sharpton and I guess Chris Witherspoon will kind of contort themselves to justify the things they probably were railing against 10 minutes earlier in this show about, you know, 1% and life's a luxury and not paying fair shares. And then, well, you can't expect Hillary Clinton to go, you know, to not take, have a luxurious travel experience. It was just pretty funny to me.
Well, and they've certainly excused it for this president as well. Didn't he rack up $1 billion in personal spending on the taxpayer dime at one point between his vacations and all sorts of other things in a calendar year?
I remember a couple of years ago, and I'm blanking on her name, but Kate Middleton, there we go, sorry about that, that when they did their whole trip to the U.S. and Canada, that they actually flew, I believe, first class in some standard I think British Airways or something like that. Now, I'm sure, yes, there were some provisions taken, but they did not have this whole super chartered flying experience. And you'll see cases where European royalty will fly on, again, commercial airlines, actual, you know, royalty in other countries, but Hillary Clinton can't be expected to do that.
You know, she is dirt poor or dead broke or whatever it was.
Yeah, well, probably both. Yeah, so.
Andrew, we'll call it there for today. Talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you. See you tomorrow.
Andrew Johnson of National Review. And for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Have a great day, everyone.